You're listening to Security Wire Weekly, a SearchSecurity.com podcast for August 27th, 2008. PCI DSS changes. Welcome to the program. I'm Rob Westervelt. In this edition, PCI Council General Manager Bob Russo joins us. Russo talks about the changes ahead for PCI DSS. He tells us that the latest version does away with the less secure WEP wireless standard and requires antivirus for all operating systems.
There's analysts, there's industry experts, and there's the Security Squad. In a monthly podcast series, the writers and editors of SearchSecurity.com and Information Security Magazine debate today's hot-button security issues. Everything from the demise of network access control to terrorism to the merits of compliance. No topic is out of bounds. Join the discussion. Download Security Squad and our other great podcast today. Go to SearchSecurity.com/podcast. That's SearchSecurity.com/podcast.
And we're back. The payment card industry data security standard will be updated in October. PCI DSS version 1.2 includes clarifications to the rules addressing wireless security, antivirus software, and much more. PCI Council General Manager Bob Russo joins us. Neil Reuter of Information Security Magazine joins me in asking Bob how the changes were made and what areas received the most attention. First, why don't you tell us a little bit about the process that led to this revision?
Okay. Well, first of all, we are on a life cycle plan for not only this standard, but for all of our standards. And the life cycle process is generally a two-year process. Of course, unless there's something that rears its ugly head that needs to be dealt with immediately, in which case we will do that. But normally it's going to be a two-year process. And the cycle looks like releasing the version. Well, we'll start with the 1.1 back in September of 2006. So as you know, with 6.6 within that version, if there are any major changes to the version that would affect compliance across the board, or that require some time in order to be implemented, generally we will make them a best practice for a certain period of time. And, you know, depending on what the change is, and I don't know about changes in the future, but depending on what the change is, it can run anywhere from, as an example, 3 months to possibly even a couple of years before it becomes a requirement as opposed to a best practice. So that being said, all of the information that we garnered from the last community meeting last September and throughout the feedback process with all of our participating organizations and our board of advisors and QSAs and ASVs has all been factored into this specific version. And I guess it's important to make sure that your readers understand that this is not a major release. This is not a 2.0. Mm-hmm. This is a 1.2. So there's a lot of clarifications within this. There's a lot of flexibility that's in here based on feedback that we've gotten. So basically, if I have to sum it up, it's incorporating a lot of the best practices that we've been seeing and that we've been using with regard to questions that we get over, you know, over the past year and a half, 2 years, that are all up on the website now in our FAQ. That's all been incorporated in there. There's a lot of clarity with regard to scoping now and reporting, because there was a lot of disparity in that area. You know, you'd talk to one of X number of QSAs that we've got on our website, and, you know, depending on how they would look at what you've got, you know, the scope would be different. So we're trying to make that pretty clear as to, you know, how things get scoped, what's in scope, what's out of scope, and so on. There were also a few redundant sub-requirements within the 1.1, and we're eliminating some of those, and we're trying to consolidate everything so that it's more succinct with regard to documentation and the guidance that we put out on navigating your way through the DSS and so on.
Why don't we go into some of the clarifications that were made? I think the council made it very clear that there are no new requirements.
Right.
But some of the clarifications, I think, affect a lot of customers. One being the phasing out of WEP in terms of wireless. Is everyone going to need to implement 802.1x, or are there going to be some other ways that they can protect wireless transmissions?
Well, you know, we had to basically put a line in the sand. At this point, there are issues, as you well know, with WEP, and we need to start everybody down the path of thinking a different way about securing this information. So basically, that was what we did. And bear in mind that this is a summary that you've gotten.
Sure.
You actually haven't gotten the full blown standard yet. That won't be until the end of September, beginning of October. And there'll be clarifications in there, on some of this stuff. So this is basically to give people an idea of what we were thinking and to, sort of keep them abreast of what's going on every step of the way. Okay? And that's basically what we're trying to do. So when the full-blown standard comes out, some of the stuff is still being tweaked. So there'll be some clarifications in there regarding wireless and possibly some issues dealing with compensating controls, so as not to, turn the industry upside down, if you will, by having, a lot of these requirements out there. But, at this point, we needed to make a statement. We needed to make sure that people understood that we are moving away from WEP.
Sure. And, one of the things you've done is set, a date to which new implementations are not allowed, March 31st, 2009.
Right, 2009.
And then current implementations must be discontinued by June 30th, 2010. How did you come up with the dates? And, are there a lot of people still using WEP and, in your research to come up with the dates?
Yeah, I'm sure there are. But again, we needed to put a line, we needed to draw a line in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what we've done here. Now, as I said, when the standard comes out at the end of September, there'll be more clarifications and more tweaking, especially in this particular area. The wireless area, is one that changes so rapidly that, it's hard to, it's hard to keep up, and it's something that we have to address and something that we've got to stay on top of, regularly, and that's what you'll see at the end of September when this is released.
Of course, this latest revision also wraps in the requirement 6.6,
right,
making it mandatory. Are you finding that the clarification that you made earlier this summer, what kind of feedback are you getting from
it? Well, we've had over 18 months. I mean, June was when it became an actual requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've had 18 months of people building up to it. And, we've put out clarifications on that specific. I mean, there were questions on, is this a web application, firewall, or is this an application layer firewall? And so we've put out some guidance on that, which I think cleared things up, even further at this point. But I actually haven't had a lot of pushback or a lot of questions. I mean, I generally speak in front of a large audience at least once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that there would be questions on that, or there would be people raising their hands with issues on it, more so back in June when it was becoming a requirement. And to be perfectly honest with you, it hasn't really been an issue. Not that I've seen anyway. I think there's been enough time for people to get prepared and get ready for it. And, thankfully they have. So we haven't really seen too much pushback.
Another area being clarified is the use of antivirus software. And it now must be applied to all operating system types. Can you be a little more specific? Does this include all flavors of Linux? What about mainframes?
Well, in in some instances, you know, these things don't exist in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, a very broad statement in the summary, you know, saying that we're going to be requiring antivirus software pretty much across the board wherever it applies. I mean, certainly if there's nothing available, or if you have to use, you know, something at a different level, that can certainly be a compensating control. But, you know, we just wanted to make sure in the summary that everybody knew that if there is something available, if there is a way, you know, to get a virus on a specific operating system, then you need to take precautions to make sure you prevent it.
Sure. Requirement 10 talks about logs. For external facing technologies must be copied to an internal log server.
Mm-hmm.
Was there some initial confusion with that, with the current version of the standard?
There wasn't really confusion. I just don't think it was stated clearly as to where it needed to be.
Okay.
And so, you know, we just put a clarification out indicating where it needed to go.
And then, Neil, was that you?
Yeah, excuse me. I just had a follow-up question on that. So when we talk about the audit trail history must be immediately available for analysis, does that mean that it has to be available in such a way that you can pluck the information out easily, or just say, you know, here's the information.
No, here it is.
There, and go search for it.
No, here it is. You know, it would be wonderful if it were an easily accessible means and the information was specific and we didn't have to go, or forensics investigators didn't have to go searching for it all over the place. But that's, I think, probably a bit much to ask. So just the fact that there is a log and here it is, go ahead and use it, you know, if you need it.
Why 3 months of audit trail history?
Well, you know, very often it's difficult to take to have somebody store more than that. I mean, we'd love to have more if they've got it. But 3 months seem to be, you know, the best time frame in order for a forensics investigator to go back and actually get an idea of what's been going on.
Now, on requirement 11, you made some clarifications around vulnerability scans and penetration testing, and really delineated the roles of the QSA and ASV.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, specifically, I think we were saying that both the internal and the external penetration tests, number one, are required, but, you know, you don't require a QSA or an ASV to do these pen tests. So if you've got a mechanism to initiate pen testing on your own, you know, certainly that's what we're looking for. So, you know, not that you've got to go out and hire somebody to come in and do social engineering for you and the like. Plus, there are products out there that you can buy that will do pen testing for you on a regular basis as well.
On the same requirement, Bob, what about the guidance on the use of wireless analyzers and or wireless intrusion detection prevention system? What guidance are you talking about there?
There's going to be more clarification as to how to use them, what we're expecting once you've put them in. The mere fact that you've got one in there, you know, that's looking, one example, you know, is, you've got stores in a mall and you come in with a wireless analyzer and you look at it and it shows you that you've got wireless access points, you know, everywhere, but which ones belong to you? You know, so there's a little more clarification there specific to what we need and what we'd like to see.
And if I can go back to requirement 6, another portion of that, you talk about added flexibility in the patching requirement by specifying a risk-based approach. I think the requirement now is to patch within 1 month.
Thirty days.
Yeah. Can you discuss that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're a large corporation, not only do you want to get this patch in quickly, but you want to make sure that it's tested correctly. You want to make sure that before it goes into your production system, you know, you've banged on it, you know, quite a bit. And very often that takes more than 30 days to get that to any kind of change request, you know, may take more than 30 days to get in. And, you know, we're being flexible about that and saying, you know, if it's a low risk type of thing, you know, then the 30 days is not the issue. It's a very high risk kind of thing. You know, then certainly it's prudent to get it in as quickly as possible. But we didn't want to just make a blanket statement that everything needed to be 30 days.
So when the assessor comes in, say a year from now, and this is in force, how will the assessor judge what an acceptable patching policy is?
Well, you know, if a standard patching policy, you know, is okay, and you know, if they have something that's 30 days or 60 days, that's fine. But again, each patch has to be looked at for the risk that it poses. If there's a, you know, I mean, if you get a major patch that comes out for, you know, from an operating system vendor that says, hey, this is a major hole and this needs to be done now, otherwise you're wide open, you know, certainly based on a risk-based approach, you would, you know, you would circumvent your 60-day or, you know, 45-day or whatever your standard, you know, patch control is to get this in as quickly as possible because it's a big hole. So, you know,
in other words, the assessor will be looking for a sound policy and process and make sure it's being followed.
Correct, right. And if, you know, again, based on the severity of the patch, based on the risk that it poses, you know, they would expect to see something done, you know, within that 30-day period.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at certsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at certsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.